Hi, welcome to Talk Chinese. My name is Xiaolan. Today, we would like to talk about history in Chinese. We have an historian, Jonathan Dugdale. Jonathan is a researcher at University of Birmingham. Hi, Jonathan, 你好。
Hi, Xiaolan, 你好。
Yeah, which part of history do you study?
I study the Liao dynasty, who ruled in northern China about 1,000 years ago.
Right, okay. Things about history. We need to learn how to say history in Chinese first. We say 历史。
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 Yeah, 历is the first word, it's the fourth tone, and that means going through. And the character is actually combining with a few components.
Yeah.
First part is the planting of the grain.
Mm-hmm.
And then second part is going through. So when we go through the planting of the grain, we create a calendar. So 历 means calendar.
Right, that's really interesting.
历. And if you really want to emphasize the pronunciation, we can say L-I and the fourth tone, 历.
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 And the second word, 史.
史.
史 is slightly harder because of the third tone, so we need to make an effort. 史.
史.
And 史, that means to write a story using a hand. So the character symbol describes using a hand to write a story. So the calendar plus writing a story together, that means history.
It makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, Chinese is logical. 历史.
历史.
Yeah, and you study 历史, and you are the expert of 历史. So in this case, we call you a 历史学家.
历史学家.
Yeah, 学 means to study, and in this case, it's a subject. 学.
学.
And the character for 学, it looks complicated, but once you break them down, it's actually a little boy underneath the roof having the action of learning, absorbing, studying things. So 学, that means to study.
Again, yeah.
It's very graphical.
Yeah. Logical, yeah.
So, yeah, logical, 学. And in this case, that means the subject of the study. So 学.
学.
Yeah, so 历史学, that means the subject of history. And then we add the one more word, 家, at the end.
家.
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 Yeah, 家 originally means home. It's a character of a pig underneath the roof, because in ancient China, people raised pigs at home. So 家 means home. In this case, that means the person who understands some subject really well, the expert.
Yeah.
The professionals, the professors, 家. So 学家 means a scholar. So 历史学家.
历史学家.
Yeah, that means you are a historian.
Yeah.
历史学家. And then when we expand 家, we can say, okay, the scientist is 科学家.
科学家.
Yeah, 科学 is science. And then to say the person is a chemist, we say 化学家.
化学家.
Yeah, did you see the 学 keep coming back?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You can use it in so many different contexts.
Exactly. And 学 is the study. So in this case, it's a subject. So 化 means transformation. So the study of transformation is the chemistry. 化学家.
化学家.
Yeah. And not only in science, in the subjects, sometimes we call, for example, pianist. We call them 钢琴家.
钢琴家.
Yeah. 钢琴.
钢琴家.
Yeah. 钢琴, 钢琴 is the piano, so the pianist is 钢琴家.
钢琴家.
Yeah, so when we describe someone as something 家, that's mainly the great acknowledgement of the person's achievement. The person is highly recognized, either a scholar or in the case as a musician. We tend to describe people as like a concert pianist rather than just a piano teacher teaching a tutoring at home. So we say 钢琴家 tend to be people who perform,
yeah,
and certain subjects acquire the reputation by doing so.
Gives a sense of expertise.
That's right. So you are a 历史学家.
谢谢.
Okay. So when we study 历史, do you find it very useful in terms of reflecting the human nature? Did you see that we continue doing the same thing again and again, even from your study of Liao Dynasty 1,000-something years ago?
Certainly, yeah. And one great example of that with the Liao Dynasty is that they created a system of two different administrations. They ruled the people in the north of their empire differently to the south of their empire because the southern people were sedentary. They lived on farmland and the northern people were nomadic. They lived on pastoralism and herding animals. So they had two different systems. And some people see that as the basis for the new system in Hong Kong. The one country, two systems policy that China now operates in Hong Kong can be seen as kind of a direct descendant of that original Liao policy 1,000 years ago.
How interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's a lesson we learned? What can we do differently this time?
I don't know. I think just respect on both sides, I think, is the most important thing. That's something that kept the Liao in power for 200 years. So who knows how it will work out in China.
Right. Okay. In your study of Liao Dynasty, you emphasize quite heavily on their influence by Buddhism.
That's correct. Yeah. They were a major player across East Asia, linking not just with China, but they also had Buddhist links with Korea and Japan. And often with history, we think about China as being, you know, separate from the rest of the world. But actually, what we see with the Liao dynasty is that they were linked to all these different places, to Korea, to Japan, to Southeast Asia, to India, through Buddhism.
Right. Yeah, sure. Of course, Buddhism started in India, and then now it's one of the major religions in across Asia, in different countries and with different branches.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the way to say Buddhism, we say 佛教.
佛教.
Yeah, 佛教.
佛教.
Yeah, 教 means discipline, so that could be any religion, and 佛, that's the 佛 is the abbreviation of Buddhism.
Yeah.
That's 佛教.
佛教.
Yeah, and then if we want to say a Buddhist, we say 佛教徒.
佛教徒.
Yeah, 徒, that means the apprentice or followers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then in every religion, architecture is quite important. In 佛教, we have a lot of temples, a lot of like a tower type.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, and we call 佛塔.
佛塔, yeah.
Yeah, 佛 is Buddha, Buddhism, and 塔 here is the tower.
Yeah.
You are also the expert of studying 佛塔, right?
Yeah, that's my specialist subject. It's interesting, the character 塔 didn't exist in China before Buddhism came to China, and it was created specially to describe this sort of building.
Okay, so the symbol was just specifically to describe the Buddhism towers.
Yeah, so what it was that the left radical is tu.
Yeah, the soil, yeah.
And the right-hand radical, it's actually changed. The modern character is different to how it looked originally.
Mm-hmm.
But the right-hand side was originally a phonetic representation of the word for Buddha.
Yep.
So what it means is that the Buddha under the ground, because pagodas were originally designed to be built over the site of buried Buddhist relics.
Mm-hmm.
So like remains of the Buddha or of important monks. And the pagoda is built to mark the site of this burial.
Right. And then is there any specific requirement to construct a 佛塔?
Yeah. So originally they were created only if you had an actual relic of the Buddha himself, Siddhartha Gautama. If you had a part of his body, could you create a pagoda? But over time, obviously, he was only one person and he lived 2,600 years ago. There's not enough parts of him to go around.
So, yeah.
Often you got pagodas that were built over the body of a famous monk or somebody who was important in Buddhism.
Sure. Okay. And then, ta, this word, of course, as you said, originally was only for the Buddhism temple, the Buddhism towers. And nowadays we call anything with similar structure. For example, the Eiffel Tower, they actually is 铁塔. 铁 means iron.
Yeah. Yeah. So what happened there was that because pagodas are so tall, and most Chinese architecture, if you look at the Forbidden City or something famous or the Great Wall, they're very long,
mm-hmm.
but they're not necessarily very tall.
Mm-hmm.
So because pagodas were the only really tall thing in the landscape.
Right.
It became synonymous with all sorts of towers. And then when China came into contact with other cultures and they saw towers, the most logical character to use was Ta.
Ta, yeah, that's it. So the Eiffel Tower in Paris is Tie Ta. And then when they see like a lighthouse, which is not really that tall, but because on the cliff or by the seaside, everything is quite flat. And so they call Deng Ta.
Deng Ta, right, yeah.
Yeah. That deng is the lamp. So the lamp on top of the ta, that's deng ta, lighthouse.
Yeah. Again, following that logic of, you know, a light on top of a tower, a lighthouse. Yeah.
Exactly. And then I remember when I grew up in Taipei as a kid, at that time, the water supply was quite an issue. So we had something called water tower on top of every building.
Yeah.
We call 水塔.
水塔, yeah.
Yeah, 水 is water. And then tower, in this case, is not for Buddhism purposes. It's just the structure stick on top of something, 水塔.
It's amazing how something that came into the language 2,000 years ago to describe a Buddhist tower is now used in so many different contexts.
It is, it is. And there's another one, the pyramid. The pyramid in Egypt, we call 金字塔.
金字塔, yeah.
Yeah, and then...
The golden tower.
Yeah, the golden tower. And 金 is gold. And 字 means the character.
Mm.
So the golden character tower is the pyramid. 金字塔.
金字塔.
Yeah. Okay. So it's such great fun talking to you, Jonathan.
Thank you.
As a historian, your work is fascinating. And I think you should really host Hot Talk Chinese because your understanding of Chinese language and the character and culture is so deep.
My Chinese still has a long way to go.
Right. We definitely want to invite you to come back.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Jonathan. You are a 历史学家 and you share stories with us about Buddhism, 佛教, and the Buddhism tower, 佛塔. And if you are a Buddhist person, we call you 佛教徒. Please don't forget to rate us, review us, and share what you have learned. 再见, Jonathan. 再见.
再见.